compound, Thomas kept thinking things couldn't get worse. But they did. The buildings were shabbier, the streets dirtier. He saw several people lying on the sidewalks, their heads resting on filthy bags or wadded-up pieces of clothing. Each one of them stared at the sky with a glazed expression, a look of oblivious glee. The Bliss was aptly named, Thomas thought. The guards marched ahead, sweeping their launchers left and right at anyone who got within a dozen feet of them. At one point they passed a ravaged-looking man, his clothes torn, his hair matted with some kind of black goo, skin covered in rashes, as he fell on a drugged-out teenager and started beating him. Thomas stopped, wondering if they should help.
"Don't even think about it," the short guard said before Thomas could get a word out. "Keep moving."
"But isn't your job to—" The other guard cut him off.
"Shut up and let us handle things. If we meddled in every squabble and catfight we saw, we'd never be done. We'd probably be dead. Those two can sort out their own problems."
"Just get us to Newt," Minho said evenly. They continued, and Thomas tried to ignore the gargled scream that suddenly rose behind them. Finally, they reached a high wall with a big archway that led to an open area full of people. A sign at the top of the arch proclaimed in bright letters that this was the central zone. Thomas couldn't quite make out what was going on inside, but everyone seemed busy. The guard stopped, and the one with the mustache addressed the group.
"I'm only going to ask once. Are you sure you want to go in there?"
"Yes," Minho answered quickly.
"Okay, then. Your friend is at the bowling alley. As soon as we point him out, I want our money."
"Let's just get moving," Jorge growled.
They followed the guards through the arch and entered the central zone. Then they stopped to take it all in. The first word that popped into Thomas's mind was madhouse, and he realized that it was almost literally true. Cranks were everywhere. They milled about in a circular area several hundred feet across that was bordered by what had apparently once been shops and restaurants and entertainment venues. Most of them were run down and closed. The majority of the infected didn't seem quite as gone as the matted hair fellow they'd seen out in the streets, but there was a frenzied air about the groups of people. To Thomas, everyone's actions and mannerisms seemed exaggerated. Some people were laughing hysterically, a wildness in their eyes as they slapped each other's backs roughly. Others cried uncontrollably, sobbing all alone on the ground, or walking in circles, faces in their hands. Small fights had broken out everywhere, and here and there you'd find a man or woman standing still and screaming at the top of their lungs, faces red and necks corded. There were also those who huddled in groups, arms folded and heads snapping left and right, as if they expected to be attacked at any second. And just as Thomas had seen in the outer rings, some of the cranks were lost in the haze of the Bliss, smiling as they sat or lay on the ground and ignored the chaos. A few guards walked around, weapons held at the ready, but they were vastly outnumbered.
"Remind me not to buy any real estate here," Minho quipped.
Thomas couldn't bring himself to laugh. He was filled with anxiety, and he desperately wanted to get this over with.
"Where's the bowling alley?" he asked.
"Over this way,"
the shorter guard said. He headed to the left, sticking close to the wall, as Thomas and the others followed. Brenda walked beside him, their arms brushing with every step. He wanted to take her hand, but he didn't want to make any move that would call attention to himself. Everything about this place was so unpredictable, he didn't want to do anything he didn't absolutely have to. Most of the cranks stopped their feverish activities and stared at the small group of newcomers as they approached and walked past. Thomas kept his gaze lowered, scared that if he made eye contact with anyone, they might get hostile or try to talk to him. There were catcalls and whistles, lots of crude jokes or insults thrown their way as they kept moving. They passed a dilapidated convenience store, and Thomas could see through the open window, the glass was gone, that almost all the shelves were empty. There was a doctor's office and a sandwich shop, but no lights shone in either one. Someone grabbed Thomas's shirt by the shoulder. He spun to see who it was as he swatted the hand away. A woman stood there, her dark hair messy and a scratch on her chin, but otherwise she seemed somewhat normal. Her face was drooping in a frown, and she stared at him for a moment before opening her mouth as wide as it would go, revealing teeth that were in good shape other than looking as if they hadn't been brushed in a while, and a tongue that was swollen and discolored. Then she closed her mouth again.
"I want to kiss you," the woman said. "What do you say, Muni?"
She laughed, a manic cackle that was full of snorts, and ran her hand lightly down Thomas's chest. Thomas jerked away and continued walking. He noticed that the guards hadn't even stopped to make sure nothing bad happened. Brenda leaned closer and whispered to him,
"That might have been the creepiest thing yet."
Thomas just nodded and kept going. Chapter 38. The bowling alley didn't have any doors. Based on the thick rust that covered the exposed hinges, they'd been taken off and disposed of a long time ago. A large wooden sign hung above the entrance, but any words it had once displayed were gone, leaving only faded scratches of color.
"He's in there," the guard with a mustache said. "Now pay up."
Minho stepped past him to the empty doorway and leaned through the opening, craning his neck to see inside. Then he turned around and looked at Thomas.
"I can see him in the back," Minho said, his face pinched with worry. "It's dark in there, but it's definitely him."
Thomas had been so worried about finding their old friend, he realized he didn't have any clue what they'd actually say to him. Why had he told them to get lost?
"We want our money," the guard repeated.
Jorge appeared completely unfazed.
"You'll get double if you make sure we get back to our burg safely."
The two guards consulted. Then the shorter one took a turn speaking.
"Triple. And we want half of it now to make sure you're not blowing smoke out your butts."
"That's a deal, muchacho."
As Jorge pulled out his card and touched it to the guards, transferring the money, Thomas felt a grim satisfaction that they were stealing money from Wicked.
"We'll wait right here," the guard said when they were done.
"Come on," Minho said.
He went inside the building without waiting for a response. Thomas looked at Brenda, who was frowning.
"What's wrong?"
he asked, as if there were just one thing.
"I don't know," she responded. "I just have a bad feeling."
"Yeah, you and me both."
She gave him a half-smile and took his hand, which now he gladly accepted. Then they went into the bowling alley, with Jorge right behind them. As with many things since his memory had been wiped, Thomas had images in his mind of what a bowling alley should have looked like and how it functioned, but he couldn't recall having ever bowled. The room they stepped into was far from what he'd expected. The lanes where people had once bowled were now completely torn up, most of the wood panels ripped out or broken. Sleeping bags and blankets filled the spaces now, with people either napping or lying in a daze as they stared at the ceiling. Brenda had told Thomas that only the rich could afford the bliss, so he wondered how people would dare reveal to others that they were using it in a place like this. He imagined it wouldn't be long before someone decided to do whatever it took to get the drug from them. In the niches where the bowling pins used to stand, several fires burned, which couldn't have been very safe, but at least one person sat at each fire tending it. The smell of burning wood wafted through the air, and a smoky haze choked the darkness. Minho pointed to the far left lane, about 100 feet away. Not many people were over there. Most seemed to congregate in the middle lanes. But Thomas spotted Newt immediately, despite the poor lighting. It was the flash of his long blonde hair in the firelight and the familiar shape of his slumping body. His back was to them.
"Here goes nothing," Thomas whispered to Brenda.
No one bothered them as they carefully made their way to Newt, picking through the maze of people dozing in blankets until they reached the far lane. Thomas watched where he walked. The last thing he wanted was to step on some crank and get bitten in the leg. They were about 10 feet away from Newt when he suddenly spoke in a loud voice that echoed off the dark walls of the bowling alley.
"I told you bloody shanks to get lost!"
Minho stopped, and Thomas almost ran into him. Brenda squeezed Thomas's hand, then let go, which was when he realized how much he'd been sweating. Hearing those words come out of Newt somehow let him know that it was over and done. Their friend would never be the same. He had only dark days ahead.
"We need to talk to you,"
Minho said, moving a couple of feet closer to Newt. He had to step over a skinny woman lying on her side.
"Don't come any closer,"
Newt answered. His voice was soft, but it was full of menace.
"Those thugs brought me here for a reason. They thought I was a bloody immune holed up in that Shuckburg. Imagine their surprise when they could tell I had the flare eating my brain. Said they were doing their civic duty when they dumped me in this rat hole."
When Minho didn't say anything, Thomas spoke up, trying not to let Newt's words overcome him.
"Why do you think we're here, Newt?
I'm sorry you had to stay back and got caught. I'm sorry they brought you here. But we can break you out. It doesn't look like anyone gives a clunk who comes or goes." Newt slowly twisted around to face them. Thomas's stomach dropped when he saw that the boy had a launcher clutched in his hands. And he looked ragged, like he'd been running and fighting and falling down cliffs for 3 days straight. But despite the anger that pooled in his eyes, he hadn't been taken by madness quite yet.
"Whoa there,"
Minho said, taking a half step back. He barely missed stepping on the lady at his heels.
"Slim it nice and calm. There's no need to point a Shuck launcher at my face while we talk. Where'd you get that thing anyway?"
"I stole it," Newt answered.
"Took it from a guard who made me unhappy."
Newt's hands were shaking slightly, which made Thomas nervous. The boy's finger hovered over the trigger of the weapon.
"I'm not well," Newt said. "Honestly, I appreciate you bugging Shanks coming for me. I mean it. But this is where it bloody ends. This is when you turn around and walk back out that door and head for your burg and fly away. Do you understand me?"
"No, Newt, I don't understand," Minho said, the frustration in his voice escalating. "We risked our necks to come to this place, and you're our friend, and we're taking you home. You want to whine and cry while you go crazy, that's fine. But you're going to do it with us, not with these Shuck cranks."
Newt suddenly jumped to his feet, so quickly that Thomas almost stumbled backward. Newt lofted the launcher and pointed it at Minho.
"I am a crank, Minho. I am a crank. Why can't you get that through your bloody head? If you had the flare and knew what you were about to go through, would you want your friends to stand around and watch? Huh? Would you want that?"
He was shouting by the time he finished, and was shaking more with each passing moment. Minho didn't say anything, and Thomas knew why. He himself was trying to find words and coming up empty. Newt's glare shifted to him.
"And you, Tommy,"
the boy said, lowering his voice.
"You've got a lot of nerve coming here and asking me to leave with you. A lot of bloody nerve. The sight of you makes me sick."
Thomas was stunned silent. Nothing anyone had ever said had hurt so much. Nothing. Chapter 39. Thomas couldn't think of any possible explanation for the statement.
"What are you talking about?"
he asked. Newt didn't respond, just kept staring at him with hardened eyes, his arms shaking, his launcher pointed at Thomas's chest. But then he stilled and his face softened. He lowered the weapon and looked at the floor.
"Newt, I don't get it,"
Thomas persisted quietly.
"Why are you saying all this?"
Newt looked up again, and there was none of the bitterness that had been there just seconds earlier.
"I'm sorry, guys. I'm sorry. But I need you to listen to me. I'm getting worse by the hour, and I don't have many sane ones left. Please leave."
When Thomas opened his mouth to argue, Newt held up his hands. "No. No more talking from you. Just please. Please leave. I'm begging you. I'm begging you to do this one thing for me. As sincerely as I've ever asked for anything in my life, I want you to do this for me. There's a group I've met that are a lot like me, and they're planning to break out and head for Denver later today. I'm going with them. He paused, and it took every bit of Thomas's resolve to keep quiet. Why would they want to break out and go to Denver?
I don't expect you to understand, but I can't be with you guys anymore. It's going to be hard enough for me now, and it'll make it worse if I know you have to witness it. Or worst of all, I hurt you. So let's say our bloody goodbyes, and then you can promise to remember me from the good old days.
I can't do that, Minho said.
Shuck it, Newt yelled. Do you have any clue how hard it is to be calm right now? I said my piece and I'm done. Now get out of here. Do you understand me? Get out of here.
Someone poked Thomas's shoulder, and he spun to see several cranks had gathered behind them. The person who'd jabbed Thomas was a tall, broad-chested man with long, greasy hair. He reached out again and pushed the tip of his finger into Thomas's chest.
I believe our new friend asked you people to leave him alone, the guy said.
His tongue snaked out to lick his lips as he spoke. This is none of your business, Thomas replied. He could sense the danger, but for some reason he didn't care. There was only room enough inside him to be sick about Newt. He was our friend way before he came here. The man slicked his hand over his oily hair.
That boy's a crank now, and so are we. That makes him our business. Now leave him alone.
Minho spoke before Thomas could respond.
Hey, psycho, maybe your ears are clogged with a flare. This is between us and Newt. You leave.
The man scowled, then brought up a hand to show a long shard of glass gripped in his fist. Blood dripped from where he held it.
I was hoping you would resist, he snarled. I've been bored.
His arms flashed out, the glass slicing toward Thomas's face. Thomas ducked toward the floor and reached up with his hands to deflect the blow. But before the weapon hit him, Brenda stepped in and swatted the guy's hand away, which sent the glass shard flying. Then Minho was on him, tackling the crank to the ground. They landed on the woman he'd stepped over earlier to get to Newt, and she screamed bloody murder, started flailing and kicking. Soon the three of them were entangled in a wrestling match.
Stop it! Newt yelled. Stop it now!
Thomas had been frozen in place, crouching as he waited for an opportunity to jump in and help Minho. But he twisted around to see that Newt was holding his launcher in shooting position, his eyes wild with fury.
Stop, or I'll start shooting and not give a buggin' piece of clunk who gets hit!
The man with the greasy hair pushed his way out of the melee and stood up, kicking the woman in the ribs as he did so. She wailed as Minho got to his feet, scratches covering his face. The electric sound of the launcher's charge filled the air, just as Thomas got a whiff of burnt ozone. Then Newt squeezed the trigger. A grenade smashed into Greasy Hair's chest, and lightning tendrils enveloped his body as he fell screaming to the ground, writhing, legs rigid, drool foaming out of his mouth. Thomas couldn't believe the sudden turn of events. He looked at Newt with wide eyes, glad he'd done what he had, and happy he hadn't aimed the launcher at him or Minho.
I told him to stop, Newt half whispered.
Then he aimed the weapon at Minho, but it was shaking because his arms were.
Now, you guys leave. No more discussion. I'm sorry.
Minho held up his hands.
You're going to shoot me, old pal?
Go, Newt said. I ask nicely. Now I'm telling.
This is hard enough. Go!
Newt, let's go outside. Go!
Newt stepped closer and aimed more fiercely.
Get out of here!
Thomas hated what he was seeing, the complete wildness that had taken over Newt. His whole body trembled, his eyes had lost any hint of sanity. He was losing it completely.
Let's go,
Thomas said, one of the saddest things he'd ever heard himself say.
Come on.
Minho's gaze snapped to Thomas, and he looked like his heart had been shattered.
You can't be serious.
Thomas could only nod. Minho's shoulders slumped, and his eyes fell to the floor.
How did the world get so shocked?
The words barely came out, low and full of pain.
I'm sorry, Newt said, and there were tears streaming down his face. I'm going to shoot you if you don't go. Now!
Thomas couldn't take it for one more second. He grabbed Brenda by the hand, then Minho by the upper arm, started pulling them along toward the exit, stepping over bodies and winding his way through the blankets. Minho didn't resist, and Thomas didn't dare look at him, and could only hope that Jorge was following along. He just kept going, across the lobby, to the doors and through, outside into the central zone, into the chaotic crowds of cranks. Away from Newt. Away from his friend. And his friend's diseased brain.
Chapter 40. There was no sign of the guards who'd escorted them there, but there were even more cranks than when they'd entered the bowling alley. And most of them seemed to be waiting for the newcomers. They'd probably heard the sounds of the launcher firing and the screams of the guy who'd been hit. Or maybe someone had come out to tell them. Whatever the case, Thomas felt as if every person looking at him were past the gone and hungry for human lunch.
"Look at these jokers," someone called out.
"Yeah, ain't they pretty?"
another answered.
"Come to play with the cranks, or are you on your way to joining us?"
Thomas kept moving, making his way toward the arched entrance to the central zone. He'd let go of Minho's arm, but still held Brenda's hand. They marched through the crowd, and Thomas finally had to stop meeting people's gazes. All he saw was madness and bloodlust, and jealousy carved onto countless bleeding and mangled faces. He wanted to run, but had the sense that if he did, the whole crowd would attack like a pack of wolves. They reached the arch, went through it without hesitating. Thomas led them down the main street, crossing through the rings of dilapidated houses. The ruckus of the zone seemed to have started up again now that they were gone, and eerie sounds of crazed laughter and wild screaming followed the group on their trek. The farther they got from the noise, the less tense Thomas felt. He didn't dare speak to ask Minho how he was. Plus, he knew the answer. They were just passing another set of broken homes when he heard a couple of shouts ring out, and then the sound of footsteps.
"Run!"
someone yelled.
"Run!"
Thomas came to a stop just as the two guards who'd abandoned them came careening around the corner. They didn't slow, but ran toward the farthest ring of the town and the burg. Neither of them had their launchers anymore.
"Hey!" Minho shouted. "Get back here!"
The guard with the mustache looked back.
"I said run, you idiots! Come on!"
Thomas didn't take time to think. He sprinted after them, knowing it was the only choice. Minho, Jorge, and Brenda followed close on his heels. He looked back to see a cluster of cranks chasing them, at least a dozen, and they seemed frantic, as if a switch had been flipped and every one of them had reached the gone at once.
"What happened?" Minho asked through heavy breaths. "They dragged us away from the zone," the shorter man yelled. "I swear to God, they were going to eat us. We barely escaped."
"Don't stop running,"
the other guard added. The two of them suddenly peeled off in another direction, down a hidden alley. Thomas and his friends continued toward the exit, leading to their burg. Cat calls and whistles rose from behind them, and Thomas risked another glimpse back for a better look at their pursuers. Torn clothes, matted hair, muddied faces. But they'd gained no ground.
"They can't catch us," he yelled,
just as the exterior gate came into view ahead of them.
"Keep going, we're almost there."
Even so, Thomas ran faster than he'd ever run in his life, pushed harder than he ever had in the maze. The thought of getting caught by those cranks filled him with horror. The group made it to the gate and passed through it without pausing. They didn't bother to close it, just ran straight for the burg, its hatch opening as Jorge pushed the buttons on his pad. They reached the ramp and Thomas ran up it and hurled himself inside. He turned to see his friend sliding to the floor around him, the ramp squealing as it started moving upward to close. The pack of cranks chasing them would never make it in time, but they kept running, screaming, and shouting nonsense. One of them reached down and picked up a rock, hurled it. The thing fell 20 feet short. The berg rose into the air, just as the door sealed shut. Jorge hovered the ship just a few dozen feet in the air while they gathered their wits. The cranks were no threat from the ground. None of them had weapons. Not the ones who'd followed them outside the wall, at any rate. Thomas stood with Minho and Brenda at one of the viewing ports and watched the deliriously angry crowd below. It was hard to believe that what he was seeing was real.
"Look at them down there," Thomas said. "Who knows what they were doing a few months ago? Living in a high-rise, maybe? Working at some office? Now they're chasing people like wild animals."
"I'll tell you what they were doing a few months ago," Brenda answered. "They were miserable, scared to death of catching the flare, knowing it's inevitable."
Minho threw his hands up.
"How can you worry about them? Was I alone just now? With my friend? His name was Newt."
"Nothing we could have done,"
Jorge called from the cockpit. Thomas winced at the lack of compassion. Minho turned to face him.
"Just shut up and fly, shuckface."
"I'll do my best,"
Jorge said with a sigh. He fiddled with some instruments and got the berg moving. Minho slumped to the floor almost like he'd melted.
"What happens when he runs out of launcher grenades?"
he asked no one in particular, looking at an empty spot on the wall. Thomas had no idea how to respond, no way to express the sorrow that filled his chest. He sank down next to Minho on the ground and sat there without saying a word as the berg rose higher and flew away from the Crank Palace. Newt was gone. Chapter 41. Eventually, Thomas and Minho got themselves up and went to sit on a couch in the common area while Brenda helped Jorge in the cockpit. With time to think, the full reality of what had happened hit Thomas like a falling boulder. Ever since Thomas had entered the maze, Newt had been there for him. Thomas hadn't realized just how much of a friend he'd become until now. His heart hurt. He tried to remind himself that Newt wasn't dead. But in some ways, this was worse. In most ways. He'd fallen down the slope of insanity, and he was surrounded by bloodthirsty cranks, and the prospect of never seeing him again was almost unbearable. Minho finally spoke in a lifeless voice.
"Why did he do that? Why wouldn't he come back with us? Why would he point that weapon at my face?"
"He never would have pulled the trigger," Thomas offered, though he doubted it was the truth.
Minho shook his head.
"You saw his eyes when they changed. Complete lunacy. I'd be fried if I'd kept pushing. He's crazy, man. He's gone whacker from top to bottom. Maybe it's a good thing. Come again?"
Minho asked as he turned to Thomas.
"Maybe when their minds go, they're not themselves anymore. Maybe the Newt we know is gone and he's not aware of what's happening to him. So really, he's not suffering."
Minho almost looked offended by the notion.
"Nice try, Slinthead, but I don't believe it. I think he'll always be there just enough to be screaming on the inside, deranged and suffering every shuck second of it, tormented like a dude buried alive."
That image made Thomas not want to talk anymore, and they fell silent again. Thomas stared at the same spot on the floor, feeling the full dread of Newt's fate, until the berg landed with a thump back at the Denver airport. Thomas rubbed his face with both hands.
"I guess we're here. I think I understand Wicked a little more now," Minho said absently. "After seeing those eyes up close, seeing the madness, it's not the same when it's someone you've known for so long. I've watched plenty of friends die, but I can't imagine anything worse. The flare, man. If we could find a cure for that."
He didn't finish the sentence, but Thomas knew what he was thinking. Thomas closed his eyes for a second. Nothing about this was black and white. It never would be. Jorge and Brenda joined them after they'd sat a while in silence.
"I'm sorry," Brenda murmured.
Minho grunted something. Thomas nodded and gave her a long look, trying to let her know with his eyes how terrible he felt. Jorge just sat there, staring at the floor. Brenda cleared her throat.
"I know it's hard, but we need to think about what we're going to do next."
Minho flew to his feet and pointed at her.
"You can think all you want about whatever shuck thing you want, Miss Brenda. We just left our friend with a bunch of psychos."
He stormed out of the room. Brenda's eyes fell on Thomas.
Sorry.
He shrugged. It's okay. He was with Newt for 2 years before I showed up in the maze. It'll take him some time.
We're really spent, muchachos,
Jorge said.
Maybe we should take a couple of days and rest. Think it all through.
Yeah,
Thomas murmured. Brenda leaned toward him and squeezed his hand.
We'll figure something out.
There's only one place to start, Thomas replied. Galleys.
Maybe you're right.
She squeezed his hand once more, then let go and stood up.
Come on, Jorge. Let's make something to eat.
The two of them let Thomas be alone with his sorrow. After a dreadful meal during which no one spoke more than a couple of meaningless words at a time, the four of them went their separate ways. Thomas couldn't stop thinking about Newt as he wandered the burg aimlessly. His heart sank when he thought about what their lost friend's life was going to become, what little left of it he had.
The note.
Thomas stood dazed for a moment, then ran to the bathroom and locked the door. The note! In all the chaos of the Crank Palace, he'd completely forgotten about it. Newt had said Thomas would know when the time came to read it. And he should have done it before they'd left him in that rancid place. If the time hadn't been right then, when would it have been? He pulled the envelope out of his pocket and ripped it open, then took out the slip of paper. The soft lights that ringed the mirror lit up the message in a warm glow. It was two short sentences.
Kill me. If you've ever been my friend, kill me.
Thomas read it over and over, wishing the words would change. To think that his friend had been so scared that he'd had the foresight to write those words made him sick to his stomach. And he remembered how angry Newt had been at Thomas specifically when they'd found him in the bowling alley. He'd just wanted to avoid the inevitable fate of becoming a crank. And Thomas had failed him. Chapter 42. Thomas decided not to tell the others about the message from Newt. He didn't see what possible purpose it could serve. It was time to move on, and he did so with a coldness that he didn't know he had. They spent 2 nights in the burg, resting up and talking plans. None of them knew much about the city or had any solid connections. Their conversations always returned to Galley and the right arm. The right arm wanted to stop Wicked. And if it was true that Wicked might begin the trials all over again with new immunes, then Thomas and his friends had the same goals as the right arm. Galley. They had to go back to Galley. On the morning of the third day after their run-in with Newt, Thomas showered, then joined the others for a quick meal. It was obvious how anxious everyone was to get moving after 2 days of sitting around. The plan was to go to Galley's apartment and start from there. There'd been a little worry about what Newt had told them, that some cranks were planning to break out of the palace and go to Denver, but there'd been no sign of them from the air. Once they were ready, Thomas and the others gathered at the hatch door.
Let me do the talking again,
Jorge said. Brenda nodded.
And when we get in, we'll find a cab.
Fine, Minho muttered. Let's quit this shuck yapping and go. Thomas couldn't have said it better himself. Movement was the only thing that would deaden the despair he felt about Newt and his dreadful note. Jorge pressed a button, and the huge ramp of the cargo door started to pivot downward. The door had only opened halfway when they saw 3 people standing just outside the burg. By the time the bottom edge thumped the ground, Thomas had realized that they weren't there with a welcome banner. 2 men, 1 woman, wearing the same metallic protective masks as Redshirt back in the coffee shop. The men held pistols, and the lady had a launcher. Their faces were dirt-smeared and sweaty, and some of their clothes had been torn, as if they'd had to fight their way through an army to get there. Thomas could only hope it was security being extra cautious.
What is this?
Jorge asked.
Shut your mouth, Muni,
one of the guys said, his mechanized voice making his words all the more sinister.
Now step down here nice and easy, or you won't like what happens. Don't try anything.
Thomas looked past their assailants and was shocked to see that both gates leading into Denver were standing wide open, and 2 people lay lifeless in the narrow alley leading to the city. Jorge was the first to respond.
You start firing that thing, hermano, and we'll be on top of you like stink on Dookie. You may get one of us, but we'll get all three of you punks.
Thomas knew it was an empty threat.
We've got nothing to lose,
the man replied.
Give it your best shot. I'm pretty confident I'll nail two of you before anybody takes a single step.
He lifted his gun a couple of inches and aimed at Jorge's face.
Fair enough,
Jorge muttered, and put his hands in the air. You win, for now.
Minho groaned. You are one tough slinthead.
But he raised his hands, too.
You guys better not drop your guard, that's all I'm saying.
Thomas knew they had no choice but to go along. He put up his hands and was the first to walk down the ramp. The others followed right behind, and they were led around to the back of the burg, where an old beat-up van waited, the engine rumbling. A lady in a protective mask sat at the steering wheel, and two others holding launchers sat on the bench seat behind her. One of the men opened the side door, then gestured inside with a nod of the head.
In you go. One wrong move and bullets start flying. Like I said, we've got nothing to lose. And I can think of a lot worse things than the world with one or two less munis in it.
Thomas climbed into the back of the van, all the time working at their odds. 6 versus 6, he thought. But they had weapons.
Who's paying you to steal immunes?
He asked as his friends clambered in to sit beside him. He wanted someone to confirm what Teresa had told Galley, that munis were being rounded up and sold. Nobody responded. The three people who'd greeted them at the burg got into the van and closed the doors. Then they aimed their weapons toward the back.
There's a pile of black hoods in the corner,
the lead guy said.
Put them on, and it won't sit well with me if I catch you peeking during the ride. We like to keep our secrets nice and safe.
Thomas sighed. Arguing would be pointless. He grabbed one of the hoods and slipped it over his head. All he saw was darkness as the van lurched into motion with a roar of the engine. Chapter 43. It was a smooth ride, but it seemed to last forever. And so much time to think about things wasn't exactly what Thomas needed, especially without being able to see. He was nauseated by the time they finally stopped. When the side door of the van opened, Thomas instinctively reached up to take off his hood.
Don't do it,
the lead guy snapped.
Don't you dare take those off until we tell you to. Now get out, nice and slow. Do us a favor and keep yourselves alive.
You sure are a tough shank, Thomas heard Minho say. Easy to do when you've got 6 people with guns. Why don't you...
He was cut off by the thump of a hard punch, followed by a loud grunt. Hands grabbed Thomas and pulled him out of the van so roughly that he almost fell down. Once he got his balance, the person yanked again and started leading him away. Thomas was barely able to keep his feet under himself. He kept quiet as he was led down a set of stairs and then down a long hallway. They stopped, and he heard the swipe of a key card, the click of a lock, then the creak of a door opening. As it did, the murmurs of hushed voices filled the air, as if dozens of people were waiting inside. The woman gave him a push, and he stumbled a few steps forward. He immediately reached up and yanked the hood off his head, just as the door closed behind him. He and the others stood in a huge room filled with people, most of them sitting on the floor. Dull lights in the ceiling illuminated the few dozen faces that stared back at them, some of them dirty, most of them scratched or bruised. A woman came forward, her face twisted by fear and anxiety.
What's it like out there? She asked. We've been in here for a few hours, and things were falling apart. Has it gotten worse?
More people started to approach their group as Thomas answered.
We were outside the city. They got us at the gates. What do you mean things were falling apart? What happened?
She looked at the floor.
The government declared a state of emergency without any kind of warning. Then the police, the cop machines, the flare testers, they all disappeared. All at once, it seemed. We got snagged by these people trying to get work at the city building. There wasn't even time to figure out what was happening or why.
We were guards over at the Crank Palace, another man said. Others like us had been disappearing left and right, so we finally gave up and came to Denver a few days ago. We got nabbed at the airport, too.
How'd everything get so bad so suddenly? Brenda asked. We were here 3 days ago.
The man let out a sharp, bitter laugh.
The whole city is full of idiots, thinking they've been containing the virus. It's been a long and slow rumble, but it's all finally exploded in our faces. The world has no chance. The virus is too strong. Some of us had seen this coming for a long time.
Thomas's gaze wandered back to the group of people approaching. He froze when he saw Eris.
Minho, look, he said, elbowing him and pointing.
The boy from Group B had already broken into a grin and was jogging over. Behind him, Thomas could see a couple of girls who had been in Eris's maze group. Whoever these people were who had taken them, they were good at their job. Eris reached Thomas and stood in front of him as if he were about to give him a hug, then held out a hand instead. Thomas shook it.
Glad you guys are okay, the boy said. You too.
Seeing Eris's familiar face made Thomas realize that any bitterness he'd felt about what had happened between them in the Scorch was gone.
Where is everyone?
Eris's face darkened.
Most of them aren't with us anymore. They got taken by another group.
Before Thomas could process what he'd said, Teresa appeared. Thomas had to clear his throat to get rid of the lump that had suddenly formed there.
Teresa?
He felt such a flurry of conflicted emotions, he could barely get the word out.
Hey, Tom.
She stepped close to him, her eyes sad.
I'm so glad you're okay.
Her eyes moistened with tears.
Yeah, you too.
Part of him hated her. Part of him had missed her. He wanted to scream at her for leaving them behind at Wicked.
Where did you guys go? She asked. How did you get all the way to Denver?
Thomas was confused.
What do you mean, where did we go?
She stared at him for a few seconds.
We've got a lot to talk about.
Thomas squinted.
What are you up to now?
I'm not up to... Defiance gripped her voice.
There's obviously been some miscommunication. Look, most of our group was captured by different bounty hunters yesterday. They've probably already been taken back and sold to Wicked, including Frypan. I'm sorry.
An image of the cook popped into Thomas's head. He didn't know if he could handle losing yet another friend. Minho leaned in to speak.
I can see you're as cheerful as always. So glad to be back in your sunshiny presence.
Teresa completely ignored him.
Tom, they'll be moving us soon. Please come talk to me, in private, now.
Thomas hated the fact that he wanted to, and he tried to hide his eagerness.
The rat man already gave me his big speech. Please tell me you don't agree with him and think I should go back to Wicked. I don't even know what you're talking about.
She paused, as if battling her pride.
Please?
Thomas stared at her for a long moment, not sure how he felt. Brenda was just a few feet away, and it was clear she wasn't happy to see Teresa.
Well?
Teresa asked. She motioned to their surroundings.
Not a lot to do in here but wait around. Are you too busy to talk to me?
Thomas had to stop himself from rolling his eyes. He pointed to a couple of empty chairs in the corner of the large room.
Let's go, but make it quick.
Chapter 44 Thomas sat with his head against the wall, arms folded. Teresa had her legs pulled up under her, sitting so that she faced him. Minho had warned him not to listen to a word she said as they'd walked away.
So,
Teresa said.
So. Where do we start?
This was your idea. You tell me. We can be done if you don't have anything to say. Teresa sighed.
Maybe you could start by giving me the benefit of the doubt and quit acting like a jerk. Yes, I know I did things in the Scorch, but you also know why I did them. To save you in the long run. I didn't know it was all about variables and patterns then. How about giving me a little credit? Talk to me like a regular person.
Thomas let silence fill the air for a few moments before he answered.
Okay, fine. But you left me behind at Wicked, which shows you— Tom!
She yelled, looking as if she'd been slapped.
We did not leave you behind. What are you talking about?
What are you talking about? Thomas was thoroughly confused now.
We didn't leave you behind. We came after you. You left us behind.
Thomas could only stare at her.
Do you really think I'm that stupid? All anyone talked about at the complex was that you, Newt, and Minho had broken out and were in the surrounding forest somewhere. We looked, but didn't see any sign of you. I've been hoping ever since that somehow you made it back to civilization. Why do you think I was so thrilled to see you alive?
Thomas felt a stirring of familiar anger.
How can you possibly expect me to believe that?
You probably knew exactly what Ratman tried to tell me, that they needed me, that I'm the so-called final candidate. Teresa slouched.
You think I'm the most evil person to ever walk the earth, don't you?
She didn't wait for him to answer her, though.
If you had just gotten your memories back like you were supposed to, you'd see that I'm the same Teresa I've always been. I did what I did in the Scorch to save you, and I've been trying to make up for it ever since.
Thomas was having a hard time staying angry. She didn't seem to be acting.
How can I believe you, Teresa?
How? She looked up at him, and her eyes were glassy.
I swear to you, I don't know everything about the final candidate. That stuff was developed after we went to the maze, so I have no memories of that. But what I did learn was that Wicked doesn't intend to stop the trials until they get their blueprint. They're preparing to start another round, Thomas. Wicked is gathering more immunes to begin testing if the trials didn't work. And I can't do it again. I left to find you. That's it.
Thomas didn't respond. A part of him wanted to believe. Desperately.
I'm so sorry,
Teresa said through a sigh. She looked away and ran her hand through her hair. She waited several seconds before she looked at him again.
All I can tell you is that I'm torn up inside, ripped apart. I did believe that a cure could happen, and I knew they needed you to do it. It's different now. Even with my memories back, I can't think the same way I did before. I can see now that things will never end.
She stopped talking, but Thomas had nothing to say. He searched Teresa's face and saw a pain unlike any he'd ever seen before. She was telling the truth. She didn't wait for him to speak before she continued.
So I made a deal with myself. I'd do whatever it took to make up for my mistakes. I wanted to save my friends first and then the other immunes if possible. And look what a great job I did.
Thomas searched for words.
Well, we haven't done much better, have we?
Her eyebrows rose.
Were you hoping to stop them?
We're about to be sold back to Wicked, so what does it matter? She didn't answer right away. Thomas would have given anything to be inside her head, and not in the old way. For a brief moment, he felt sad, knowing they'd shared countless hours together that he no longer had any memory of. They'd been best friends once. She finally said,
If somehow we could do something, I hope that you'd find a way to trust me again. And I know we can convince Eris and the others to help us. They feel the same way I do.
Thomas knew he had to be careful. It was strange that she only agreed with him about Wicked now that she'd gotten her memories back.
We'll see what happens, he finally said.
She frowned deeply.
You really don't trust me, do you?
We'll see what happens, he repeated. Then he stood up and walked away, hating the look of hurt on her face, and hating himself for caring after everything she'd done to him. Chapter 45 Thomas found Minho sitting with Brenda and Jorge when he returned, and Minho didn't seem happy to see him. He gave Thomas a nasty look.
So what did that shuck traitor have to say?
Thomas sat down beside him. Several strangers had gathered closer, and he could tell they were listening in.
Well?
Minho pushed.
She said that the reason they escaped was because they found out Wicked plans to start all over again if they have to. That they were rounding up immunes, just like Gally told us. She swears that somehow they were led to believe that we'd already broken out, and that they looked for us.
Thomas paused. He knew Minho wouldn't like the next part.
And she'd help us if she can. Minho just shook his head.
You're a slint head.
You shouldn't have talked to her. Thanks. Thomas rubbed his face. Minho was right.
Hate to barge in here, muchachos, Jorge said. You can talk all day about this crap, but it means diddly unless we can get ourselves out of this nice little place, no matter who's on whose side.
Just then the door to the room opened, and three of their captors walked in with big sacks stuffed full of something. A fourth followed, armed with a launcher and a pistol. He swept the room looking for trouble, and the others started passing out what was inside the bags. Bread and bottles of water.
How do we always get into these messes? Minho asked.
At least we used to be able to blame everything on Wicked.
Yeah, well, we still can,
Thomas murmured. Minho grinned.
Good, those shuck faces.
An uneasy silence settled on the room as the kidnappers moved around. People began to eat. Thomas realized that they'd have to whisper if they wanted to keep talking. Minho nudged Thomas.
Only one of them has a weapon, he whispered. And he doesn't look so bad. I bet I could take him.
Maybe,
Thomas answered under his breath.
But don't do anything stupid. He's got a gun as well as a launcher. And trust me, you don't want to get shot by either.
Yeah, well, you trust me this time.
Minho gave Thomas a wink, to which Thomas could only sigh. The odds were not good that what was about to happen would go unnoticed. The kidnappers approached Thomas and Minho and stopped at their little group. Thomas took a roll and a bottle of water, but when the man tried to hand some bread to Minho, he swatted it away.
Why would I take anything from you? It's probably poisoned.
You want to go hungry? Fine by me, the guy replied, moving on.
He had nearly passed them when Minho suddenly leaped to his feet and tackled the man holding the launcher. Thomas flinched as it slipped out of the guy's grip and discharged, sending a grenade up toward the ceiling where it crashed in a display of lightning. The kidnapper was still on the ground when Minho started punching him, struggling to grab the man's pistol with his free hand. For a moment, everyone froze, but then movement exploded all at once before Thomas could react. The three other guards dropped their bags to go after Minho, but before they could take a step, they had six people on them, throwing them to the ground. Jorge helped Minho drag the guard to the floor and was stomping the man's arm until he finally let go of the pistol he'd pulled from his belt. Minho kicked it across the floor, and a woman picked it up. Thomas saw that Brenda had grabbed the launcher.
Stop!
She shouted, aiming the weapon at the kidnappers. Minho stood up, and as he stepped away from the man on the ground, Thomas could see that the guy's face was covered in blood. People were already dragging the other three guards over to lie next to their partner, lining them up so that all four were on their backs in a row. It had all happened so fast, Thomas hadn't moved from his spot on the floor, but he immediately got to work.
We have to get them to talk, he said. We have to hurry before backup comes.
We should just shoot them in the head, a man called out. Shoot them, and get out of here!
A few others shouted their agreement. Thomas realized that the group had turned into a mob. If he wanted information, he had to work fast, before things fell apart. He stood and made his way over to the woman with the gun and convinced her to hand it to him. Then he turned and knelt beside the man who'd given him the bread. Thomas put the gun to the guy's temple.
I'm going to count to three. You either start telling what Wicked plans to do with us and where you were going to meet them, or I'll pull the trigger. One.
The man didn't hesitate.
Wicked? We got nothing to do with Wicked.
You're lying.
Two. No, I swear. This has nothing to do with them. At least as far as I know.
Oh, really?
Then you want to explain why you're out kidnapping a bunch of immune people?
The man's eyes flickered to his friends, but then he answered, looking straight at Thomas.
We work for the right arm.
Chapter 46.
What do you mean you work for the right arm?
Thomas asked. It made no sense.
What do you mean, what do I mean?
The man said, despite the gun at his head.
I work for the freaking right arm. Why is that so hard to understand?
Thomas pulled the gun away and sat back, confused.
Then why would you be out capturing immunes?
Because we want to, he said, eyeing the lowered weapon. You ain't got no business knowing nothing else. Shoot him and move on to the next one,
someone in the crowd called out. Thomas leaned back in, pressed the gun against the man's temple again.
You're awfully brave considering I'm the one with the gun. I'll count to three one more time. Tell me why the right arm would want immunes, or I'll just have to assume you're lying.
One. You know I ain't lying, kid.
Two.
You ain't gonna kill me. I can see it in your eyes.
The man had called his bluff. There was no way Thomas could just shoot some stranger in the head. He sighed, pulled the gun away.
If you work for the right arm, then we're supposed to be on the same side. Just tell us what's going on.
The guy sat up slowly, and so did his three friends, the bloody-faced man groaning with effort.
If you want answers, one said, then you'll have to ask the boss. We seriously don't know anything.
Yeah, added the man next to Thomas. We're nobodies.
Brenda stepped closer with her launcher.
And how do we get to this boss of yours?
The man shrugged.
I have no idea.
Minho groaned and snatched the gun from Thomas's hands.
I've had enough of this clunk.
He pointed the weapon at the man's foot.
Fine, we won't kill you, but your toe's gonna be smarting something real awful in 3 seconds if you don't start talking. One.
I'm telling you, we don't know nothing.
The guy's face was pinched in anger.
Fine,
Minho replied. He fired the gun. Thomas watched in shock as the man grabbed his foot, wailing in agony. Minho had shot him right in the pinky toe. That part of the shoe and the toe itself were completely gone, replaced by a bleeding wound.
How could you do that?
The guard next to him on the ground yelled as she moved to help her friend. She pulled a wad of napkins from her pants and pressed them against his foot. Thomas was shocked that Minho had actually done it, but he had to respect the guy. Thomas couldn't have pulled the trigger, and if they didn't get answers now, they never would. He looked over at Brenda, and her shrug showed that she agreed. Teresa was watching from a distance, her face unreadable. Minho kept at it.
Okay, while she's working on that poor foot of his, someone better start talking. Tell us what's going on, or we're going to lose another toe.
He waved the pistol at the lady, then the other two guys.
Why are you kidnapping people for the right arm?
We told you we don't know anything, the woman answered. They pay us, and we do what they ask.
And you?
Minho asked, pointing the gun at one of the men.
You want to say something? Save a toe or two?
He held up his hands.
I swear on the life of my mom, I don't know anything, but...
He seemed to regret that last part immediately. His gaze shot to his friends, and his face paled.
But what? Spill it. I know you're hiding something.
Nothing.
Do we really need to keep playing this game?
Minho moved the gun directly up against the man's foot.
I'm done counting.
Stop!
The guard yelled.
Okay, listen. We could take a couple of you back with us to ask them yourselves. I don't know if they'll let you talk to the one in charge, but they might. I'm not getting my toe shot off for no good reason.
All right, then,
Minho said, taking a step back and gesturing for the guy to stand up.
See, that wasn't so bad. Let's go visit this boss of yours. Me, you, and my friends.
The room burst into a rush of voices. No one wanted to be left behind, and no one was going to be quiet about it. The woman who'd brought in the water stood up and started yelling. The crowd went silent.
You people are a lot safer here. Just trust me on that one. If all of us tried to make it to where we'd need to go, I can guarantee half wouldn't get there. If these guys want to see the boss, then let them risk their necks. A gun and a launcher aren't going to do a bit of good out there. But in here, we have a locked door and no windows.
When she finished, another chorus of complaints filled the room. The woman turned to Minho and Thomas and spoke over the noise.
Listen, it's dangerous out there. I wouldn't take more than a couple of people. The more you have, the more likely you'll be seen.
She paused and scanned the room.
And I'd go soon if I were you. From the looks of it, these people are only going to get antsier. Pretty soon there'll be no way to hold them off. And out there,